This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, 7:06 a.m. on Monday, the 22nd of April. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Keith Kum. Now, in half an hour, we're going to discuss developments in U.S. politics, including the House of Representatives' vote on foreign assistance to Ukraine. But as always, we are going to kickstart the week with a look at how global markets closed last Friday.
It was a pretty much mixed day on Friday. For Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 0.6%. The S&P 500 closed 0.9% lower. The Nasdaq fell 2.1%, registering its six-day losing streak. Earlier in the day in Asia, Japan's Nikkei was down 2.7%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was down 1%. Shanghai's Composite was down 0.3%. Singapore's STI was down 0.4%. And bucking the trend, FBM KLCI was up 0.2% at 1,548 points.
Of course, BFM, we always buck the trend.
Well, for some thoughts on where international markets could be heading this week, we have on the line with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global. Kingsley, good morning. U.S. markets remain volatile while the tech-heavy Nasdaq seeking the worst sell-down for the year. What are markets telling us? Is the bull run over?
Well, it's certainly a little soft right now. I mean, we've seen new highs in gold, falling bond prices and falling stock prices. So, you know, these markets are a bit nervous. I think the primary concern is about a possible resurgence of inflation. And that's for two reasons. One is the clear strength in the US economy, which is a positive, but it may mean that interest rates cuts will not be coming anytime soon. And then, of course, the second one is the concerns about tensions in the Middle East and the ongoing war in Ukraine. So they're all weighing a little on markets right now. I think the market is really having to adjust to the prospect of fewer and later interest rate cuts and maybe elevated interest rates for some time. And that's why I think you've seen the tech stocks sell off, because obviously they, as growth stocks, they're very sensitive to the discount rate through where the bond level is.
Kingsley, what does this tell us about what our strategy should be? Is this correction healthy? Should it be like 40% of active fund managers who have cut their equity exposure? What do we do going forward?
I think we just have to be a little patient right here because we're going into the next reporting season in the United States where we'll get new information on that strength in the US economy, which of course is a good thing. And then, of course, there's the inflation print that will come out on this coming Friday of this week. So the markets probably have sold down ahead of that, and they're really waiting to see how those numbers pan out, both the earnings and also the inflation. So I think this is not a time to put new money into the market. And this correction, possibly it's still a bit young and it may have further to go. What I would say, though, is that with the bond yields in the United States now above 4.5% and the 10-year headed towards 5%, that's probably good buying at that level, particularly if we were to see weaker stock markets later in the year. So I think this is a market where you wait out a little bit on buying the stocks. If anything, you may be buying the bonds. I wouldn't be putting new money into this market. We just have to wait and see on how things pan out. But the positive and the reason why we may see a correction to the upside now is that this U.S. economy being strong probably means that there will be pockets of the U.S. market that post very strong earnings numbers in this coming reporting season. And, of course, they'll catch a bid.
Kingsley, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, just want to check with you because if we look at the reporting season, 178 companies are due this week, of which half are going to be, well, half of the Magnificent Seven are also due. What happens if results really disappoint, especially the Magnificent Seven?
Well, they'll get sold down, as you saw with NVIDIA having the 10% correction on Friday. You know, these are priced for perfection. Mm. So if the Mag 7 don't have good numbers, we'll definitely see that part of the correction continue. But that doesn't mean the rest of the market is a sell. So I think we have to be just alert to the possibility that there may be a bit of rotation in this market on the back of those earnings numbers.
And if we take a look at the gauge that the Fed pays attention to, that's the personal consumption expenditures, or PCE. That's going to be coming out this week. Also, first quarter GDP. Do you think that the outcome is going to confirm what markets are expecting, namely that the Fed's only going to have two cuts this year as the economy is just too hot?
Yeah, I think so. One thing to remember here is that in addition to low unemployment, although that has been ticking up a little bit, we have a very high US budget deficit. So you're seeing a situation in the United States where there's a lot of fiscal stimulus, and that's probably going to keep inflation elevated. So we think that certainly that PCE is probably going to be a little hot. That probably means we have no more than two rate cuts. If it is really hot, then we may start to see the market remove even the two rate cut thesis and possibly only one.
If we could just look at Asia, the Nikkei 225 has seen heavy selling, with the index up 11% on a year-to-date basis against a high of 22% seen in March. Do you think this offers a buying opportunity?
Well, we remain constructive on the Japanese markets. You know, in US dollar terms, they've retraced about half of their year-to-date gains. Remember, the yen's been pretty weak. And actually, that's good for Japanese exporters because it makes them more competitive. And also the trading houses, the so-called soga shasha. And they're our favoured positions. We're not very much invested in companies in Japan that are heavily exposed to domestic consumption because, you know, Japan is in, I believe, in a technical recession at least. But I think the exporters will be doing okay. The big thing to watch this week, I think, will be the reports from the semiconductor equipment manufacturers, you know, companies like Advantest and so on, because Taiwan Semiconductor was warning last week that their CapEx plans are being curtailed a bit because they see a bit of softness. So we don't know what's going to happen with Japanese ones, but I would watch that closely because they've been selling a lot of equipment into China. We think there'll still be strength in China. So they actually may surprise positively in a way that TSM did not.
Kingsley, you mentioned about the weakness of the Japanese yen. I'm looking at it. It's above 150 to the dollar at the moment. The last time we saw this level was in the mid-1990s. How do you strategize going forward? Does it seem to be a bottom for the dollar yen?
Well, I think with the yen, it's very interesting because remember that all the way back in the 80s, when Japan was hyper-competitive and the big US concern was that, you know, Japan would take over the world, and there was that engineered so-called Plaza Accord, which actually strengthened the yen and started to erode Japanese competitiveness. So that was the past. Now, of course, with this weaker yen, Japan is increasingly competitive. But the US is distracted by, you know, the tensions with China. So I think Japan's got a free pass here. And therefore, I don't think that this yen is going to strengthen anytime soon. And we think that's actually good for Japanese exporters, as I mentioned. The other thing to remember is that Japanese real estate prices were formerly very, very high, and land prices came down a lot. So that means that Japan is actually quite competitive. Their only really big problem is a shrinking population. So, you know, have to watch that. And that's why we're not really positive on domestic consumption. But we think the Japanese economy will do well, and that weak yen helps them.
Kingsley, we have to ask you about your own country because the Australian market seems rather directionless on a year-to-date basis, actually slightly negative. Are there catalysts for a re-rating that we should be aware of?
Yeah, Australia's in a bit of a muddle right now. You know, there's positives. Obviously, lots of people want to come live here. That's why immigration is really high. But that also throws a spanner in the works as far as inflation is concerned. So, you know, the shortage of housing, which seems to be a perpetual problem in Australia, means that we have, you know, high inflation or elevated inflation, particularly for what economists call the non-tradables component. So the things we can't import. That is high, and that means that Australian interest rates will probably have to remain high, and we indeed have a what's called a per capita GDP recession, where although the economy is growing, it's not growing fast enough so that on a per person basis it's growing. So they're the problems. For a catalyst, it's hard to see one right now. Obviously, if China were to strengthen, that's good for Australia. And we'd probably see that as being a bit of a catalyst. But apart from that, there's not much on the horizon. There's a lot of policy initiatives in Australia, but they, most of them from the government seem to be adding to inflation. So I guess the big catalyst would be to see a little bit more common sense out of the government to not keep stoking the fires of inflation. I'm not sure exactly what form that would take, but if it did happen, that would be a clear signal to buy that market.
Kingsley, thanks as always for the chat. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the days and weeks ahead, covering a range of stock markets there from the US to Japan to Australia. Lots of things to watch out for as we wait for more economic data that will be released this week. But maybe we can turn our attention to some of the international headlines that have crossed our table this morning. We have news on American Express, or Amex. They reported a significant revenue increase of $15.8 billion in the first quarter, which exceeded analyst expectations.
This growth was driven by the enduring popularity of the company's premium credit card offerings, which still continue to attract consumers seeking exclusive benefits and rewards. And this is despite ongoing market uncertainties. The company still remains optimistic, projecting full-year revenue growth of up to 11%. Its CEO, Steve Squeri, emphasized the company's success in attracting high-spending, high-credit-quality customers, highlighting their crucial role in driving Amex's financial performance.
Okay, what's interesting is what people spend their money on.
Right.
And it's clearly experiences, because they spent it with, especially on the airline travel sector, reflecting strong consumer demand for premium services such as first class and business class tickets. But they're also allocating more funds for loan provisioning, probably expecting there will be an uptick in credit card delinquency rates, especially if the US economy slows down. Nonetheless, still quite a street favorite. 18 buys, 10 holds, 5 sells. Consensus target price for Amex, $226.85. Current share price above that actually was up $13.54 to $231.04. I wonder whether after the results, there will be some upgrades on this company.
Let's maybe quickly squeeze in one more stock. We see news from Procter & Gamble, or P&G. They faced a slight setback in their stock performance after reporting quarterly sales that fell short of analyst expectations. Despite this, the company did provide an improved profit outlook for the fiscal year.
While organic sales increased by 3%, P&G's prices have been steadily increasing, contributing to improved earnings forecasts. However, this pricing strategy has led to lower volume growth, particularly in North America. The company's grooming division performed well, driven by higher prices in Europe and Latin America. Its fabric care business also saw positive results.
Okay, the stock is actually up 8% on a year-to-date basis. Indicative gross yield, 2.5%. Now, does the street like this relatively consumer-staple company name? And the answer is yes. 19 buys, 9 holds, just 1 sell. Consensus target price for the stock, $170. Last done, actually up 85 cents to $158.14.
All right, it's 7:19 a.m. We're going to head into some messages, but we'll come back to cover more of the top stories in the newspapers and portals this morning. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.